This is Julie Hewitt, the chair of the Pacifica National Board. This is a continuation meeting for April 13th, 2023. It is 8:36 p.m. on the East Coast, and we do not yet have our secretary here, so I will go ahead and start the roll call. Teresa Allen.
Allen is present.
Thank you, Teresa. Adriana Casanev.
Present.
Thank you. Jim Dingman.
Here.
Thank you, Jim. Except I just put that down in the wrong place. Vanessa Dixon Briggs.
Here.
Thank you, Vanessa. Fred Dodsworth. I'll come around. Bill Foster.
Here.
Thank you, Bill. Sue Goodwin. Looks like she's connecting. I'll come back around. Heather Gray.
Here.
Thank you, Heather. Donna Grimes. All right. Julie Hewitt, I am here. Avelia Jones. Avelia wrote to
I'm here right now.
Oh, you are here. Okay. Thank you. Gotcha. Ali Alexa. Okay. Marianne Martinez.
Present.
Thank you. James McFadden wrote to me a few minutes ago and said he'd probably be late this evening. Darlene Pagano.
Here.
Thank you, Darlene. Sean Rhodes.
I am here.
Thank you, Sean. Jim Sagerton.
Here.
Thank you, Jim. Sharon Salam.
Here.
Thank you, Sharon. Aki Tanaka.
Here.
Thank you, Aki. Beth Von Gunten.
Here.
Thank you, Beth. Egberto Willis. All right. Let me go back around.
I saw a request for excused absence from Egberto.
Hang on. Let me just go back through again and then I'll pick that up. Is Fred Dodsworth here? Okay. Sue Goodwin?
Here.
Thank you, Sue. Donna Grimes. Ali Alexa. James McFadden, we already said would be late, and Egberto Willis. And I'm sorry, Teresa, did you say Egberto asked for an excused absence too?
Yes, it was an email that was sent to you, the secretary, the ED, Schwartz, and the national board at 808 Central.
Yeah, I saw it.
I saw it too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see. So that brings us, to calling. Hang on. I just navigated away from my piece of paper. Calling on other folks, Stephanie Wells.
Here.
Thank you, Stephanie. Arthur Schwartz. I'm expecting Arthur a little bit later. And Nancy Sorden. Oh, you know what? I do believe that Nancy's not only late to the meeting. She did tell me last week that she would not be able to make this evening's meeting. So what I will do is I will do my best to, take roll call votes and whatnot this evening. I think I made
unless
up a spreadsheet.
Madam Chair, unless we have someone that offers to take minutes.
Oh, would someone else like to volunteer to be the recording secretary for this evening?
I can try. Sorry, I suggested it.
Yeah, no, Marianne, are you willing to try?
I can try.
All right, great. Thank you. I mean, I think the key, Marianne, is that when we, you know, you can use the agenda for tracking roll call votes. I mean, use the list of people at the top of the agenda. But, you know, when we go through roll call votes, the most important thing is that you're, you know, noting who voted how. That's the biggest deal, because the rest of the stuff we can, you know, go back and listen to the recording if we have to. All right.
How they vote, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Gotcha.
Yep, exactly. All right. So that's, we've now made it through the roll call. The next item is the report out from the executive session of
point of order.
Go ahead, Adriana.
Chair, this is Ali Lexa. Chair.
Oh, got it. Hi, Ali. Gotcha.
I want to let you know I'm here.
Thank you. And I see that Fred Dodsworth is here now as well. Thank you, Fred. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adriana.
I have immediately stopped the seating of the directors that are not eligible to serve as 2023 BNB director, because to be eligible to serve as director, you must be a delegate at the stated in Article 5, Board of Directors of the Foundation, Section 1, Board of Directors eligibility. Some of the people calling this roll call are ineligible to serve because they are not delegate according to the Pacifica Foundation bylaw, Article 4, Delegation 8, term of office, term limit. I pasted before below in my email. If delegates are limited to a maximum of 6 consecutive years, after which they are replaced through an election or through the use of runner-up list from the last certified election. According to the Pacifica Foundation bylaw, Article 17 said that only a vote of the members of the membership can increase or extend the term of directors of delegates.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Hang on, Jim. I think I have to rule on Adriana's point of order before I can take another point of order. And I'm going to rule the point of order not well taken, since it's the same point of order that we've talked about previously. Okay. So there, I took care of that. So go ahead, Dingman.
All due respect, we all are aware of the fact that a legal decision was reached in this issue. And I do not want to burden the body and the public by reading out the decision. But I will if this continues, because it's clear to me that there are other objectives in reading this, all due respect to the person who's reading this. And there's clear language in that legal decision that clarifies this problem, period. So if this continues, I'm going to insist that part of that legal decision be read, you know, and I'd rather not do that. But it's clear to me that we're now dealing with other purposes of this issue.
Understood. I didn't hear a rule being broken there per se, but perhaps we can take this up again when we get to the legal counsel report. Okay, so now I will read the report out from the executive session of which turned out to be the only portion of the April 6, 2023 meeting of the PMB. The PMB met in closed session to conclude a confidential disciplinary matter and hear a confidential financial report. Actually, technically, we did rise and report and read that report out last week, but that was the sum total of the open session. Okay, next up is excused absences, and let's see, we have excused absences from Egberto Willis. And Avelia, while present now, is probably going to have to check out for a good chunk of the meeting. So at any rate, and I think those are the two excused absences that we have. Is there anybody else who's not present? Donna Grimes is not here, and James McFadden is not yet here, though he said, he would just be running late.
Move to excuse everybody.
Thank you, Dingman. Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you. Any objections to the move to excuse the absences of those not present? Hearing none, we'll consider those excused absences. Moving on, Hang on, I just have to write one more thing down. Moving on, the next item on the agenda is identifying timekeepers, and I need someone to keep time of people, speakers.
Julie, this is Heather. I'll do that.
Okay, thanks, Heather. And then I need someone to track time for items. A volunteer?
I can time items.
Thank you, Darlene. And I think by Darlene's slowness to volunteer, she's suggesting that, yes, she does not feel that she has a hold on keeping time of items so that other people feel like they want to volunteer in the future. They should go ahead and feel free to do so. That's what I heard, Darlene, in that silence there. Okay.
Well taken, Chair. Well taken.
Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is agenda approval for the open portion of the agenda. And this is a 5-minute item, Darlene. Okay. So item number 3 on the agenda is approving minutes. I'm not entirely sure that there are minutes that we have, to be approved. And I noticed that Donna Grimes is now here. So we'll count Donna as present. Thank you, Donna. Unless someone tells me that we're not doing the approval of the minutes. We're on agenda approval. So approving minutes. Item 4 is committee reports, and I'm not going to go through the list of all the committees. Item 5 is an affiliates report. Item 6 is a motion to seat KPFK delegates from the 2021 election. Item 7 is a report on the April 2nd KPFK LSB meeting. Item 8 is an update on the WPFW lease. Item 9 is the ED report and Q&A. Item 10 is the general counsel report and Q&A. And then we close out with unfinished business, new business. And then at a time certain of 11 p.m., we have a motion to move into executive session. And so that's the open portion session of the agenda. I move the agenda. Can I get a second?
Second.
Second,
James.
Thank you, John. Madam Chair, Adriana, with a point of information.
Yes, go ahead, Adriana.
I believe that is, I need to make a point of order with one of the motions that is there, but I don't know if you want me to do it now or do it later because
How about if we, do it when we get to that item on the agenda? Is that okay?
Okay. Perfect.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. Other discussion of the agenda?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Teresa.
Has the item regarding the reseating of the KPFK delegates been moved to open session? Is that what I understood?
Yes, and that was based on conversation. And I don't remember if we took a vote, but that was based on conversation we held in closed session last week about that it should be on the agenda. The open portion of the agenda. I know that there are some people who feel that part of the discussion associated with that item would be closed session material. And I'm going to mute Fred because he's got background noise. That there were aspects of discussion for that agenda item that would be closed session material. And so the point is we cannot have that part of the conversation in open session. And so when we get to that item, I would argue if there are closed session portions, you know, perhaps one of the things that we could do is postpone action on the item until we have that conversation in closed session, even though as a general proposition, I think the motion itself doesn't include proprietary matters that need to be covered in closed session. It's just that part of that conversation. So we'll figure it out when we get there, or at least that's my sense.
Okay, but I don't recall taking a vote on that, so I just want to call that to your attention.
I think what happened was, I don't remember the vote, but I vaguely remember, let me put it this way. I don't remember if we took a roll call vote on it, but I think it was a motion to postpone it to the open session of this week or to this week's meeting. So it was something like that.
Right. But if we decided to postpone it to this week's meeting and it was in executive session, I think the natural assumption would have been that it went from executive session to this week's executive session, just for your information.
Madam Chair, Adriana?
Go ahead, Adriana.
Yeah, I recall that we talked about that and nobody disagreed. And you say exactly that, because we discussed part of this need to be an open session. And we agree, you say it, and we agree that part of the discussion because of legal matters be an executive session, but part need to be an open session.
Right. That and so what? Yes, thank you. And so what we should do is have the open session discussion in open session, the closed session discussion in closed session. And it may be that we need to defer a vote on the item until after we've had that closed session discussion.
Chair, we are at time.
Got it. Are there any objections to approving the agenda as put forth? Hearing no objections, we'll consider the open portion of the agenda approved. Okay, and we'll, like I said, we'll deal with, you know, some of those questions that we've just been talking about as we get to those items on the agenda. Okay, next item up on the agenda is approved minutes of the open session of unspecified date, and this is a 5-minute item. I don't think that we have any minutes for an open session that we need to deal with this evening, but I could also be quite wrong about that. And would be open to hearing from other directors if, in fact, I'm wrong about that and people think we have minutes to vote on.
No, we don't, Madam Chair. We didn't receive any.
Thank you. Okay, great. So then we'll just skip right past that item on the agenda and catch up with minutes in the future. So that brings us to item 4 on the agenda, which is committee reports and... I have all the committees listed here because I recognize that some of the committees may or may not have met. I was taking a, you know, good stab in the dark guess at how long to give various committees for their report outs. And I recognize that people, you know, committees may not have elected new chairs yet. And so what I will do for the short run, at least, is rely on committee conveners. And so the audit committee is first up for 5 minutes, and I believe that was Darlene.
Right. We met on the 3rd, and we will meet again on the 17th. We have completed with Terry Goodwin as the teller the election for officers, and that will be Susan Young from KPFT as chair and Kim Kaufman from Kim Kaufman from Los Angeles. I beg your pardon, anyone. I just insulted. And we are ready to present a motion to engage an audit firm, but that is not on the agenda yet.
Okay. So, but that was a motion that the audit committee passed.
Yes.
Well, so if you can email that motion.
I don't have that motion. I stepped back from the convener as soon as we had a chair pro tem.
Fair
so
enough.
I'm reporting more as a former convener.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Do you have a sense, Darlene, that...
Susan Young said she sent it to you.
Oh. If Susan Young says she sent it to me, then let me look for it. And then that way I could read it.
I don't have a time or date, but she said, oh, is it not on the agenda?
Well, but it came out of committee. So the point is it can go on the agenda just like that. And so I am.
This would have been after the meeting, which was on the 3rd.
Okay.
And she says that in her note to me earlier, I believe I sent the motion to Julie and the secretary.
Here it is. I found it.
Okay.
Okay. So two things I'm going to do quick is I'm going to paste it in the chat for the people who can see the chat so that, because a lot of people like to be able to see that. Okay. And so that's the fastest way. And now the second fastest way. Oh, it looks to me like, no, she sent it to everybody who was on the audit committee. So I am now forwarding it to the PNB.
I'm sure she's begging everyone's pardon right at this minute.
No, that's, there are some things about, committee work that can be a little bit, it's hard to get it right and perfectly. Okay. So let me read the motion from the committee because I have it right in front of me and I have sent it to everybody. So you should get it in your inboxes momentarily. Knock on wood, I hope. The servers are working in our favor. Okay. The motion is, whereas the conducting of timely audits is a cornerstone of fiduciary responsibility and best practices for nonprofit organizations, whereas the California Nonprofit Integrity Act of 2004 calls for the creation of an audit committee for all nonprofit organizations with $2 million or more in annual budget, and that the audit committee recommends to the governance body of the nonprofit corporation the selection of the auditor. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Pacifica National Audit Committee recommends the engagement of Rogers & Company to perform the 2022 audit and provide for a rotation of audit partners for the engagement. So that's a motion out of a committee, so it doesn't need to be seconded because the audit committee already passed it. And so now this motion is in front of the PNB for its consideration.
Does it need motivation?
Yes, please. Well, it doesn't need a second. Sorry. Even though I just said that, I was just going to ask for a second, but go ahead and motivate, Darlene, please.
We're late. We all know this. Our fiscal year ended, September 31st, and we're now in the middle of April. We have already, missed the 6 month, report date. So we have to get going. Rogers and Company, with different, teams have been our auditors, through NETA, period, have been our auditors. And with a new audit team, they are willing to work with us, even though payment, has been a huge problem in the past, but they are willing to take us on. They believe that we're in our financial records are in better shape after having been cared for by NETA over the years. So therefore, since we have a working relationship with Rogers and Company, they have access to many of our previous records. Can we please get going? And hire this law firm, commit to this audit firm so that we can, for everybody who says, we need to have our financials in order, this is the biggie, the audited financial statement for the year. So please let us get underway.
Thank you, Darlene. Is there any discussion of this motion?
James, for the stack.
Sagerton, go ahead.
Yeah, I hope we could just pass this immediately without much ado. Rogers and Company has worked for us for some time now. It's all good. We should go ahead and do this. Thank you.
Thanks. Dingman, I see your hand.
No, I would call the question because this is essential. We're already way behind and everybody complains about we can't get this, we can't get that. We can't get anything unless we have proper FSR. So this has to be passed immediately.
Great. Are there any objections to calling the question? Hearing none, are there any objections to the motion? Okay, so I'm just going to say one thing quick about the motion out of the audit committee. It reads like it comes out of the audit committee, so I'm going to suggest that we amend the motion in the following way to say, now therefore be it resolved that the Pacifica National Board recommends the engagement, recommends the ED sign the engagement letter of Rogers and Company to perform the, you know, and it continues on with the same language.
Thanks for that correction.
Thank you, Fred, for the second, and Darlene. Okay. Are there any objections to amending the motion to make it the PMB's motion? Hearing none, we'll consider the amendment approved. Are there any objections to the main motion as amended? Hearing none, we'll consider that motion approved. And Darlene, does that conclude the audit committee report?
That surely does, except thank you all very much. This is good news. And I have to say the 5 minutes for committee reports is up.
Madam Chair, Adriana, support a point of personal privilege. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Adriana.
Yeah, I ask Teresa, please to mute because every time you have your mic open and every time that you receive everything, we hear the noises. Please mute if you're not speaking. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and so what I am doing is pasting in the chat the slight change that we made to the resolving clause just so that okay, there you go. So now everybody can see the slight change to the wording. And also, I like to use the chat as kind of a sort of note-taking feature. Okay, so the next committee report up is the coordinating committee, which is a 5-minute report. And I will, I'm not actually the convener for the coordinating committee, but I will report that the coordinating committee has not met, and we will, I will remind the convener for the coordinating committee to get something on the calendar so that, that committee can meet. Cause after all, that committee is only, PMB directors and ex officio, members of the PMB. So that's an easy one to do. So we'll take care of that. And so then the next committee up is the finance committee. Sagerton, are you, and that's a 10-minute report. Sagerton, would you like to make a report out from the NFC?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. It won't take 10 minutes. At our last meeting, which was 2 days ago on Tuesday, we passed a central services formula, which is a flat 15% for all revenue for each station or each unit. To go to the central, to the national office. There is one exception, which is, stations that are in financial distress as, defined by the PNB will be, paying an 8% central services, fee. And, that will be, that's to be determined. we're working on budgets. We are waiting for budgets, actually, for several units. The executive director is working with the managers of those units to bring forward budgets for 2023 and 2024, and that will be a good thing, so we can hopefully get the 2024 budgets approved by the NFC prior to, and by the PMB prior to the beginning of the fiscal year for 2024. Again, still waiting on some budgets for some units. We are going to be adopting budget timelines, hopefully at our next meeting. Our next meeting will be April 26th, 2023. And we have several budgets that have already been passed pending the adoption of a central services formula. Now that we have adopted that central services formula, we will be bringing those budgets to the PMB at the next regular meeting for approval.
Dodsworth on stack.
Go ahead, Dodsworth.
I'm adamantly opposed to this. This is a sleight of hand that really has no place in this organization. Currently, we have a number of stations that are not paying their central services, and it's being accrued. And because it's being accrued, we have actual figures that we can use as we go forward. This, for example, strategic planning. The central services fees don't get reduced because people can't pay their bills. We still have to pay our bills. If they can't pay their bills, then they can do as they have done in the past, which is simply have it on the record. And when I came on board, there was a great deal of argument about whether or not some stations owed $8.6 million, now closer to $10 million. And it turns out that that was out of the Financial Services Committee or Finances Committee. And I think that if we start making up facts, if we start making up these figures that don't actually bear on how we operate, then we will allow ourselves to go into an even deeper hole. I'm totally fine with the way things are. I think transparency is critical. I'm done.
Thanks, Fred.
Sure.
Jim, are you asking us to vote on the, are you putting the NFC's motion on central services on the floor this evening?
No, we'll do that at the next regular meeting. Okay. And I would respond to the previous comment if it made any sense, but I don't think it made any sense.
All right. Anyone else with questions regarding the report from the National Finance Committee? All right. Next up is the Governance Committee.
Yeah, I can speak to that.
Go ahead, Aki.
We just passed a simple motion. So to help orders, all of the committees, both LSP and committees, should notify the changes in their members through Nancy to orders so that orders doesn't get bombarded by little pieces here and there. So I will formalize a motion and just submit it next week once they get all of the names of all of the secretaries of the committees.
Ah, great. Thank you, Aki. Is there anything to report? Did the Governance Committee hold elections of officers yet?
We'll have that on the 26th.
Okay, got it. Perfect. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Aki and the Governance Committee? All right. The next one up is the Elections Committee. And Vanessa.
Okay, so as probably everyone knows from 24 emails that I sent, we had some difficulty figuring out who was actually on that committee. That was finally done. I'm going to one more time, he might get tired of it, thank Aki for his help. He was really helpful hosting meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So I appreciate that. So the first meeting is going to be on the 18th at 8:30. So let me know if I said anything wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's on the 18th at 8:30, and then we'll just go from there.
Great. That's next Tuesday. Thanks, Vanessa. Are there any questions for from the rest of the PMB about the Elections Committee report? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to Programming Committee.
Yes, Julie, we haven't held a meeting yet either, but the meeting is planned. The first meeting is planned for next Monday, actually, at 8:30 p.m. So I just want you to know.
All right, great. So that's Monday the 17th.
Yes, at 8:30 p.m. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much. Next up is Strategic Planning Committee. I believe this is Jim Dingman.
Yeah, thank you. We met on Monday. Our next meeting will be on May 8th. So we're meeting every second Monday of the month. The first meeting was productive, I felt. People were expressing the need for the necessity to find out what shows are working at each station. And which shows are most effective in raising money and have the most success, which is something we raised last year. There was a debate about the fact that we're constantly confronting crises. So a lot of people felt like we should be concentrating on long-term, you know, strategic planning, short-term, et cetera, as opposed to reacting to crises, which is, of course, what happened last year. And then we had an executive session. Which dealt with personnel matters, and we were in the midst of it joined by a general manager for one of the stations, and that actually prolonged the meeting, although it became rather productive because one of the motions being discussed had to do with grappling with the programming problem. And I think everybody felt that his input was quite valuable. So that's just a brief synopsis of what occurred.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Does anyone have questions for the Strategic Planning Committee? Go ahead, Fred. I see your.
Yeah, I have actually a statement. One of the things we had on the Strategic Planning Committee was great difficulty getting this information from the general managers. And there were a number of people, Mr. Sagerton being one and Mr. Dingman being another, who claimed that they understood which programs on WBAI were successful and had access to that, but they were not able to give that information to the rest of us because there was some question about whether that would be appropriate to pass on. And so I have suggested that we actually have a motion from the network, whereas the Pacifica Network is once again in desperate financial crisis that threatens its continued existence, be it resolved that the PNB orders the general managers of all five stations to submit as soon as possible, but no later than May 15th, data as to the most recent subscriber response to programming. Specifically, every program and every time slot shall provide garnered or committed sum total subscriber contributions toward the operating expenses of the network, promised or delivered to the station for that program and time slot. Additionally, for each program and time slot that offers premiums, the cost of acquiring all such premiums, including the cost of delivering such premiums, shall also be provided. And I don't know if this is a place where one would make such a motion, but it seems that there is a great deal of problems getting this information to the PNB so we can actually look at the other stations, find out what they're doing right, and share it among all five stations.
May I add to that, Madam Chair?
Yeah, go ahead, Dingman.
Yeah, I totally agree with Fred on this. And as one recalls, we had a motion passed by the body last year, which basically was thwarted to some extent by some of the stations. So particularly given the fiscal crisis right now, that granular information is essential for decision making. So I support that motion completely.
And it's in the chat.
Thank you. So let me just ask, and this will sound embarrassing if people pay attention to the fact that, as Chair, I'm ex officio on the Strategic Planning Committee. But did the Strategic Planning Committee pass this motion, Fred?
No, we did not actually pass it because there was a lot of questions about how to go forward. And so I agreed that I would write this motion and submit it for passage at today's meeting.
Okay. So, since it's not a motion coming out of the audit committee per se, I'm sorry, not audit, strategic planning committee per se, thank you for raising it during, the strategic planning committee report. But, I think we would put it under new business if we're to take it up this evening.
Okay, if that's how you want it,
fine. Yeah, just because it's, you know, it's not a motion out of committee and it's, you know, it's basically a change to the agenda to try and take it up here and now. So.
All right. Let me just finish with, you know, this is, I think a lot of us are in accord with the sentiments of what Fred has just put forth.
But not everyone.
Yes. But, another issue came up. And that is, how do we deal with the log jamming of the low listenership and the low audience at these various stations? And the motion was argued or put forth to essentially put a deadline at a certain date where GMs, program directors at the stations exist, that the shows that are the lowest in the, let's say we've debated about this, whether it be 10%, 25%, but the consensus was on a lower number, that a certain period be given so that people have a chance to change, to alter. But at a certain point, we have to start thinking about what to do with these shows that persistently don't have anybody listening to them. And then, of course, the other argument was, what do we replace them with? Who do we replace them with? What is the content of that, et cetera? But we have to take action to deal with the question of this persistent problem that, as far as I'm concerned, and I've argued this ad nauseum, that this is the major reason why we're in this financial situation. I don't want to get into specifics.
Point of order, but that point of information.
Yeah.
I've got a point of order first.
Okay.
And can you add me to the stack?
Yeah. Gotcha. Folks, one at a time. Beth, what is the rule that's being broken here?
That we have exceeded the time limit for this item. This was a 5-minute item. I don't have my timer in front of me, but I have no doubt that it's exceeded that 5-minute. Do we have a timekeeper? Can she verify that?
She can verify that we have had that ringer go off in the middle of the last motivation, or if that's what it was.
Yeah. Thank you, Darlene. Oh.
So I would move the orders of the day. Thank you.
All right.
Hang on. You're not recognized, Damon.
I had said point of order. Information.
Yeah, go ahead, Darlene.
Would it not be appropriate just to stick to the motion that is before us, that will be come up in new business, rather than, talk about what might happen next and what other opinion there is, whatever.
Yeah. No, that, your point's well taken, Darlene. Although since that motion that Fred raised, really belongs under new business, we don't even need to talk about it now, but it's true that the other thing that Dingaman was just mentioning was something that, the strategic planning committee discussed, but did not pass. And in fact was, something that they decided, I think this is accurate, decided not to decide on based on, conversation, involving, the GM. So anyway, so moving on from strategic planning committee, the next item on the agenda, for committee reports is the development task force. This is a 3-minute item. Beth, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, I, emailed this report to everyone at 6:02 Pacific time. So 9:02 Eastern time. This is the Pacific and National Development Task Force report to the PNB for Thursday, April 13th, 2023. That's a typo. Pacific and National Development Task Force held its regularly scheduled monthly meeting on Monday, March 27th, 2023, with 8 participants. Pacifica Executive Director Stephanie Wells joined us with an update and took questions. Discussion revolved around the sale of the KPFK building, updating Pacifica's Allegiance member database in preparation for the Pacifica delegates election later this year, Pacifica's current charity ratings agency ratings, and other related matters. The next regular meeting of the Pacifica National Development Task Force will be Monday, April 24th at 8:32 Eastern Time, 5:32 Pacific Time. I'm correcting the year, as posted to KPFTX. Thank you.
Point of information, I did not get that in my email.
I'll send it again. I'll make a couple of corrections to the typos and send it again.
I
send it to the PNB list. And the secretary.
We get it, Beth. It's okay. Yeah, some people got it, but obviously some people didn't. But it went to the PNB at pacifica.org address. So in principle, it will wind up in everybody's inbox at some point. Any questions for Beth? So next up is the COVID-19 task force. And honestly, folks, I don't know if we have anybody here who's on the task force who could report. Is there anyone? All right, hearing no one. Next up is the technology task force. That's a 3-minute report. Go ahead, Dingman.
All right. Well, as people know, we've been concentrating on preparing for the CPB application. So there's been the playing of the CPB webinars on how do you get the community service grants. And we've been having one session after the next. As I understand, GMs and the ED and other people met this week to get this process underway. Unfortunately, they decided to knock the date of the application and move it forward. So it's from May 24th. Now it's May 8th. So we got a lot of work to do. But I want to thank Ursula Rudenberg for her help in helping us get to the proper advice from the affiliate networks. I'm sure Stephanie can attest that the person that she has gotten us working with has been really cooperative and very generous with his time, Mr. Town from the University of New Mexico Santa Fe Station. And that's where we're at with that. That's now in other people's hands. We're going to be moving into talking about more concrete stuff. And we're going to invite somebody from Harvard's Shorenstein School soon to talk about the necessity of local programming on radio. They just received a whole all big grant to do that. And we're going to bring on Professor Patterson from Shorenstein at some point in the near future. But at this point, we have a few more workshops scheduled. I'm going to pull back on that because the whole purpose of that was to give added oomph to the GMs. And if they need any help, I'm sure at this point they're getting it from the GM from New Mexico. Thanks. That's the report.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Dingman on the technology task force? Beth, is that your hand? It just went down. Okay. Next up is the affiliates report and folks. I'm sorry, Beth, what?
Sorry. Can you please report from the personnel committee, which I would hope should have been convened by now. And we look forward to that.
Okay. The point to bring this up was when we were approving the agenda, but
If I got the agenda sooner, I might have had time to review it first, but I didn't.
Is there any report from the personnel committee? All right. It seems that we don't have a report from the personnel committee. Though I will nudge folks to get it going. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I think Donna Grimes was supposed to convene that. If Donna can hear this, I would be happy to help. This is something I brought up a couple weeks ago. I said we can't convene the committees until we put it on KPFTX who is on the committee. Mm-hmm. Those should be on KPFTX now. So the notices will go out to the right people so we can convene this committee. Okay, and if Donna will call me, I'll help.
I will. I will do that. Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. The other thing I want to make note of is that James McFadden, who was not here at the very beginning of the meeting, has joined us. Okay. And I've made note of that on the roll call as well. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the affiliates report, which is a 5-minute item. And folks, the thing that, and I've had a conversation with Heather Gray and Bill Foster about the possibility of doing an affiliates report when we do committee reports, even though there's not technically speaking any committee that's associated with the affiliates. The idea here is that, if we're hearing from all the other, if we're hearing from these other units and once upon a time there was an affiliates task force, there's not now, but that it wouldn't be a bad idea to hear from the affiliates every month when we go through the committee reports as well. Just is there anything new or important, that's happening in the affiliates network that we need to know about? And Heather tells me that they're not prepared to have a report this evening, but they'll give us a report in the future. So I just wanted to kind of let people know that, that's something that I think we should do. I likewise think that it wouldn't be a bad idea to have, a report from each of the stations, but we can tackle that at another time. I see, Fred, you have your hand up.
Yes, I do. I would like to say that in the strategic planning committee, we were very excited about what the affiliates are doing, and we're looking for your participation in helping us build the entire network. We know that you have some great people doing broadcasting, doing programs, and we would like to know about them, and we would like to see if we can't work them into the rest of our network to improve our subscriber base. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Fred. So, at any rate, so, Heather, did you want to add or say anything, even though you said you didn't have a report?
No, I guess we could ask Bill as well. No, but thank you for saying that. We're looking forward to giving a report in the future. And Fred, I also appreciate your comments. So look forward to talking with you about that as well. But we will definitely give a report the next time. We were not prepared for this time. Bill, do you want to say anything? Bill Foster?
Well, I have a meeting coming up, and it just has not been scheduled as of yet, but I'm looking forward to it. With the affiliate board and Ursula.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
Yep, you bet. Dingman, is your hand up on this?
Yeah, I want to piggyback. It's essential to get the affiliates involved, period. Because look at what we just got. We got one affiliate director who's generously going to give us his time and energy to help us get potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. So there's all sorts of golden kind of opportunities out there with the affiliates that we consistently do not develop and exploit. And I completely agree with Fred and others. I think we all agree, the whole board agrees, that this is something that has to be done.
Great. Thanks, Jim. All right. That concludes that item on the agenda. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is a motion to seat KPFK delegates from the 2021 election. And this was a motion that Teresa submitted. Teresa, would you like to go ahead and
order, Madam Chair?
Hang on. Let her read the motion, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, is the motion attached to the agenda?
It is, yes, and it's attached on it's listed in the open session part of the agenda.
Okay, bear with me 1 minute then. Okay. All right. Okay, whereas in the 2021 listener delegate election for KPFK, four candidates were disqualified by the NES, National Election Supervisor, after voting was completed. And these people were Nancy Perlman, Adam Woolman, Robert Payne, and Will Ryan. Whereas shortly after the election, one of them, Will Ryan, died. And whereas the Pacifica bylaws only allow candidates to be disqualified if they violate the fair campaign provisions, not because they may have been endorsed by some group. And whereas those candidates did not violate the Pacifica Fair Campaign provisions, the NES final report on those elections did not note any such violations by those candidates. And Pacifica's general legal counsel, Arthur Schwartz, has stated that those candidates would have been elected if they had not been disqualified by the NES. And in fact, the first posting of the election results show them as having been elected. And be it resolved that the Pacifica National Board authorizes the executive director to cause the original and actual pre-disqualification 2021 KPFK delegate election results to be posted at the Election Pacifica site, which is https://elections.pacifica.org/WordPress/2021-delegate-elections-results, including the improperly disqualified candidates noted in the first whereas above. And be it further resolved that Perlman, Woolman, and Payne should be immediately seated as delegates and on the local station board for KPFK, and in parentheses, for purposes of determining eligibility for serving as a PMB director, in parentheses, be given credit for serving as delegates since the time they should have been seated in December 2021, and be it further resolved that the last three KPFK listener candidates in the 2021 election who are currently listed as having been elected, which would be Rocio Rivas, Marisol Cruz, and Bella DeSoto, be returned to runner-up status as they were not among the nine candidates receiving the most STV votes in the election. And be it further resolved that after the above candidates are seated, that the KPFK LSB should have new officer elections and then a new director elections for 2023.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Sorry, I had myself muted. Hang on 1 second. Let me just seek a second for Teresa's motion.
I second it.
Thank you, Fred. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adriana.
Yeah, I ask the chair to rule this motion out of order because Article 3, member of the foundation, Section 8, said in election and voting supervision, consistent with the provision of Article 4 of this bylaw, the member's election shall be supervised, but the national election supervisor and local election supervisor and explain the place it designated for them. And Article 4, Section 6, Fair Campaign Provisions, said specifically, in the event of any violation of this provision for fair campaigning, the local election supervisors and the national election supervisor shall determine in good faith at their sole discretion an appropriate remedy, up to and include the disqualification of the candidate and or suspension from the air of the offending staff person, payer and pay for the remainder of the election period. That shows that the PMB, and it's very clear through the entire bylaw, the PMB had nothing to do. The National Election Supervisor, at their sole discretion, if they already did it, I'm very sorry, but this is out of order. This motion, the PMB cannot modify what the National Election Supervisor did. Thank you.
Thank you, Adriana. Also, thank you for having the bylaw citations handy because I was able to read along while Adriana was pointing those out. And I think that is exactly the case, that it says in good faith and at their sole discretion. And so it does seem that there is not, that the PMB does not have the authority to overrule the National Election Supervisor here. And so I'm going to rule the, that the point of order has merit and that therefore, the motion is out of order. And,
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Teresa.
I would like to challenge the decision of the chair.
Got it. Okay. I figured. So here's what we'll do, folks. We will have two people speak, for the chair's ruling and two people speak opposed to the chair's ruling. And then, we'll go to a vote as to whether to uphold the chair's ruling or not. Can I get volunteers to speak in favor of the chair's ruling?
I am in favor of the chair's ruling.
Okay, Dingman. Anyone else?
Adriana.
I'm in favor of the chair's ruling.
Okay. McFadden, I will put you down too. And then, anyone opposed to the chair's ruling who would like to argue? Teresa, do you want to be one of those people?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Anyone else who wants to argue against the chair's ruling?
I'll give it a shot.
Go ahead, Darlene. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm writing this down. Okay. So then what we'll do is, I'll take turns. I'll alternate. I'll go for and against, and then we'll go to the vote. Is that, or I suppose if people have questions, after that, I suppose we could entertain a little bit of discussion. So Dingman, why don't you go first? And, you know, this is still subject to the usual, timing people kind of thing.
All right. I've been in favor of elections in the selection of officers in the foundation starting from about 91, 92, and I acted on that faith. In the past 2 years, I have gone along and agreed that it'd be prudent to not have elections because we didn't have money or do these other things. And as a result of that, of course, we have had a lot of disruption because one group decided to interpret the bylaws one way, and then essentially we've been spending 4.5 months dealing with their interpretation. I'm not in favor of then now essentially tilting to one side that essentially in the – and I'm glad Adriana cited all that stuff – that in the elections, essentially, I'm sure these people were perfectly fine people, but if I recall, this whole incident started when – there was a mail out that asked for money. And, you know, people have to figure out that both sides have to get along. And all this I see is just an extension of these faction fights that have been very disruptive for us and have essentially eviscerated our energy for months and months and months. So I uphold the ruling of the chair. I think this is just going to take us further into more, eviscerating behavior. Thank you.
Thanks, Dingman. Then we'll hear from Teresa.
Okay. I guess first I would ask, I sent out an email to the Pacifica National Board. I sent it out last week, and it had 9 attachments, and it showed, among other things, statements by 2 of the candidates that supposed conversations that they had with the election supervisor or the council stating what they had done wrong. They stated they never had those conversations. That's just one thing. And the first hint that they were taken off the ballot was not before the election. It was not on when the votes came out, the tallies came out
October 15th, they were not notified officially that they were disqualified until about 2 weeks later, November 3rd. If this happened to you, I'm sure you would be concerned. And I think that we should talk to our corporate counsel, because I've been told, well, I just don't know whether I can say this in open session. That's why, because if it has to do with a legal issue, I would rather not state it in public session. But I have also sent an email. The subject line is arguments for the CDM KPFK candidates. And I guess one of the major reasons is the election supervisor's job in removing someone as a candidate would be if they violated the fair campaign provisions.
Your time is up.
I want to say two things. Number one, I challenge anyone here who has not read the documents regarding this to think twice before you vote to say that we won't discuss these candidates and how they should be eligible. They should have been seated a long time ago. If you haven't read the documents, I think you ought to admit that. So we could at least postpone it until you read the documents. The second thing is, I challenge anyone here on this call to tell me what campaign violations these people violated. Just because you're angry at New Day is not any excuse to take it out on these candidates. Just please,
Madam Chair,
supporting the chair, please tell me what campaign violations they violated. Thank
you. Your time is up, Teresa. Thanks.
Thank you. So next up is McFadden.
let me just start off by saying that if I had been one of these candidates and the people backing me, who I trusted, violated the election rules as they did in abusing these lists and using it for fundraising, violated my trust, you know, in them, I would have withdrawn my candidacy on my own. Now, if I thought that my candidacy to be on that LSB was so essential, you know, that I wouldn't, that violation of my trust was not there, then the second choice would be to have done what was asked of them, which is to write, to send a rebuttal of that and original letter that violated the election rules, that violated this, and denounced it. You know, and denounced it firmly. And they were asked to do that, and they didn't do that.
They were not.
They just thought it would be, they just thought it would let it go. And I think, you know, under those two conditions, that those violations were such that they deserve to have their candidacy removed. And, so I think, you know, these elections are very important, and we do need rules. We do need a election supervisor to look over and to set those rules and to enforce those rules. And it's particularly appalling that people who are so rule centered on this PNB, you know, are pushing that these people should be given a free pass for those violations. And I'm just, you know, so I want to thank Andriana for her correctly describing the bylaws in this case and what was violated. Thank you.
Thank you. And so then next up is Darlene.
Well, I'm pretty sure I can't say very much in open session. I will say that the election supervisor has a history with a number of other stations, including as the local election supervisor. And there was quite a bit of controversy over how things were run, who she listened to, who she consulted with, and all of that. And it's very convenient to then say, well, the election supervisor cannot be questioned. The election supervisor has a history of succumbing to certain people's or certain arguments, over time. And, so I'm glad I'm going to be on the election committee this year. It's like, oh, well, you can't override the election supervisor. So let's make sure that the election supervisor who has listened and agreed with our arguments in the past is the election supervisor here and now. It isn't that the election supervisor is a pristine, figure floating down from the sunlit clouds. So I, think that this should be looked at and not, you know, prevailing as, oh, well, it's 100% one way and not the other.
Point of information.
Thanks, Darlene. Go ahead, Fred.
I have been told, and I'm wondering if it's true, that everyone on that slate was in fact disqualified, or were there some exceptions made? If somebody could clarify that, I would very much appreciate it.
My understanding, and this is not from careful study right before to prepare to answer your question. My understanding is there were a bunch of people who were on that postcard. I want to say the number was 8. I'm not entirely sure that's precisely correct, but something like that. And that, four of the people were disqualified. And if it was 8, that 4 were disqualified and 4 were not.
So in other words, some people were disqualified, but other people weren't, even though it was the same slate, the same postcard. I'm speaking, Adriana.
Please,
I have a point of information, Adriana.
Hang on. I'm listening. I want to hear from Fred, and then we'll carry on. Go ahead, Fred.
So what I'm saying is it appears to me that there were some, even though everybody was on the slate card, some people were given a pass, and some people were not. Some people were allowed to proceed, and some people were not. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct, but what I will argue is that was the finding of the NES, right? And so I can't tell you tonight precisely what the NES, you know, what was exactly the reason behind why 4 were disqualified and 4 weren't. But, you know.
Point of order.
Point of order.
Hang on. I'm trying to. But Teresa, what
the other one was first?
That question is covered in the first exhibit.
Madam Chair, that is not a point of order. Please.
Yeah. Hang on, folks. I'm trying to maintain control here. So folks, what we're talking about right now, really, we're not trying to talk about the merits of what the National Election Supervisor decided. What we're trying to talk about here is whether the PNB has the authority to overrule the National Election Supervisor here. And so we heard 2 people for and 2 people against. And the only thing we're doing now is if people have clarifying questions, I don't want to debate, you know, whether what the National Election Supervisor did, whether we agree with it personally or not. That's not the point here. So,
clarification, Madam Chair.
Chair, I had a point of order.
Okay, Sagerton, I have to hear your point of order.
Thank you, and I'll be very quick. Dodsworth offered or asked for an inquiry, and then he attempted to have a second go round or a comeback, a follow up on his inquiry, and he was offering testimony, and that's not appropriate. He's limited to asking a question.
I was
not
asking
to offering
a question. That's all I did.
Fred, you're not muted.
Out of order again for speaking without being recognized.
Hang on, people. I can only, when multiple people are talking at the same time.
Point of personal privilege. I've been called out.
Hang on. Stop.
Point of personal privilege.
No, not right. I've not recognized anybody because I'm making the
point. You don't need to recognize a point of personal privilege.
No, I am speaking. Julie
and Fred, I'd like to say that we are out of time for this item.
Thank you. The point I was trying to make was when multiple people are talking at the same time, you know, it might as well be the Charlie Brown teacher who's talking. I can't understand a word anybody says. It is a limitation of my own ears. So I apologize. Okay,
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Darlene just pointed out that we're, hang on. Darlene just pointed that we're out of time on this. So before we can do anything, we have to have, a motion to extend this item.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Just to do that.
I move.
Can't we take a motion to extend?
To move that we extend 10 minutes.
I asked for a point of order before, Madam Chair.
Second.
I understand. Hang on. What we need to do though, folks, is we need, there's got to be some, people keep saying point of order. And I'm not sure that every single thing that people are raising is in fact, breaking a rule. And I want to make sure that we are, that we are doing this. So, Teresa, that was a motion to extend.
It's a point of order.
Hang on 1 second, please.
No, I said 10, Madam Chair.
10 minutes. Thank you. And Darlene seconded it. All right. So let me write that down. Go ahead. What's your point of order, Adriana?
Madam
Chair. Yeah. See, that's the problem. There's like so many points of order going on here. We got point of order on top of point of order on top of point of order. We haven't even dealt with the original point of order yet because we didn't go to a vote on it. So,
Madam Chair, Robert rule of order said that when the chair, a point of order is there and the chair rules, the only option is somebody in favor, somebody against, but the chair closed the debate with her point and then gone. It's not back and forth. It's not questioning.
Okay. Thank you.
People in for and the chair closed the debate before
okay,
going.
To okay. Vote. Thank you. Then.
Point of information.
Then we're actually done with the debate. What's the point of information, Fred?
Is it not true that to clarify an issue, a point of information is brought up?
Listen, what I don't want to debate is, I'm going to rule that Sagerton was probably right and we're going to move on. I guess that means, I'm agreeing with Sagerton's, point of order. And so we're going to continue, based on Adriana's point of order. And so, folks, I just want to like, we just have to keep going here. So, that means actually that Teresa's motion to extend for 10 minutes is technically speaking out of order too. So, so let's go to a vote on, the chair's ruling. So this is a vote to uphold the chair's ruling is a yes is to uphold the chair's ruling, that Teresa's motion of out of order and a vote no is that Teresa's motion is in order, basically.
Say that again, Chair. I'm sorry. I missed it.
The vote yes is to uphold the chair's ruling that Teresa's motion was out of order. And a vote no is that Teresa's motion is appropriate in order.
Chair, okay. I'm inquiring as to where we are on time. What are we counting?
So what we're going to do, so technically speaking, we're still on that item. We don't need to extend time because you don't need to extend time to take a vote. What we're going to do.
Point of information.
Go ahead, Teresa.
If this body finds that, in favor of the, chair.
Point of order.
If this is in the flow.
Do a point of order on a point of order.
Can I finish my question?
Hang on. Let Teresa finish with her point of inquiry. She's asking a question.
If the body finds in favor of the chair
then can I move to bring this up in executive session when our corporate counsel is here?
Do whatever you want.
Well,
thanks,
okay,
Jim.
Hang on. What I would argue is, it would be lovely to hear from the general counsel. I don't know that you would get a different outcome on bringing up the point of order, but it doesn't mean that we can't, have at least some of the conversation that is related to, confidential legal matters. We could have some of that conversation in, closed session. So, that's legitimate. Okay. Marianne, are you, ready to take a roll call vote here, please?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, go for it.
Wait. Teresa Allen?
I say no.
Adriana Casanave?
Yes, to sustain the chair.
Jim Dingman? Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Vanessa Dixon Briggs?
Yes.
Fred Dodsworth?
No.
William Foster?
Yes.
Sue Goodwin?
Can you clarify for me again what we're voting on?
We're voting on a vote to uphold the chair's ruling. That Teresa's ruling is out of order.
Abstain.
Okay. Heather Gray?
Yes.
Donna Grimes?
Yes.
Julie?
Come back and Avelia Jones.
Come back to you, Julie?
Yep.
Avelia Jones?
No.
Allie Lexa? Allie?
No. No.
I say no. James McFadden?
Yes. No.
James?
Yes, to uphold the chair.
Darlene Pagano?
No.
Pat Rhodes?
Yes.
James Sagerton?
Yes, to support the chair.
Brown Salam?
No.
Aki Tanaka?
No.
Beth Von Gutten?
Yes, to sustain the chair.
Julie Hewitt?
Hang on, can you give me a count of the votes that you have so far?
Yes, ma'am, one moment.
10-8.
Made one of my hash marks the wrong way.
Yes, I got 8 no's. Correct. And 10 yes. And one abstention. Yes.
Got it. Okay. I'll vote yes.
That's 8 no, 11 yes, and 1 abstention.
Okay. So the, chair's ruling is upheld. So that means we are, done with this item. And that takes us to item 7 on the agenda, which is, a report on the April 2nd KPFK LSB meeting, which I was hoping the, KPFK directors would be, willing to, give us a report out on, and that's a 10-minute item. Which of the directors would like to speak first?
My hand is raised.
Go ahead, Beth.
Thank you. Just very briefly, the meeting failed to make quorum, as did the officers' elections. I'm in touch with a number of the local KPFK delegates ahead of the next regular KPFK LSB meeting scheduled for this coming Sunday in an attempt to address the situation and find a way to move forward together. Thank you.
Amelia, would you like to add anything?
Museum of Motion Pictures is on the corner. I think it's
okay.
No. This thing with the Oscar Award all around the window. Facing either Wilshire and Fairfield. Yes.
Julie, can you help her mute?
Yeah, hard to make her out.
Yeah. Okay. Ali Lexa, did you want to add anything?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, we failed to reach quorum by one. So the only thing we did as a working group was reach out to the teller to extend the deadline for the election for officers, which he did. And unfortunately, within the deadline that was extended, it still didn't reach quorum. I think it needed one or two more people to vote for it to have reached quorum. So right now we are without officers, and hopefully this Sunday we can get it together, hold our officers election, and move forward as quickly as possible, have our director's election. But not much was accomplished. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. I will point out that because they failed to make quorum at the meeting, and then so then they decided that because the following week was Easter and Passover, that they have now scheduled a meeting for April 16th, which is this coming Sunday. So there will be another KPFK LSB meeting. I think one of the other things that, and if Arthur is able to join us in time to give an open session report, I suspect that part of the reason why they had difficulty making quorum was because some folks who have decided to align themselves only with the self-appointed KPFK LSB didn't come to the meeting. And I think partly, they're motivated by waiting to hear from the judge's order in the Rideau versus Pacifica case. And there has been a decision, at least on the temporary restraining order component of that case. And so I'll let Arthur speak to it, because he'll do so much more eloquently than I ever could. So when we get there, we'll hear from Arthur. So Dingman, I see your hand.
Yeah, I'd like to know from the directors in Los Angeles what has been the impact, as far as they can see, of the decision on Monday by the judge in California, which addresses a lot of these questions.
Any takers?
I can give a little bit of it.
I see Beth, and then Ali. Go ahead, Beth.
Thanks. Yes, the debate has been reflected in the online lists. I think everything I've been hearing behind the scenes is pretty well covered in the various points raised in those email debates. Our bylaws are complicated. The seat was complicated. The ruling is complicated, and it takes carefully parsing out exactly what was said, and we're working through that process. Thank you.
Ali?
Yeah, pretty much, because there's components of the ruling that are a little bit ambivalent, so there's been a lot of interpretations thrown around. So people are taking their interpretations and running with it, and making assumptions and demands based on those. But I think it's settled down a little bit, and hopefully when we get final clarification from Arthur later, we can move forward. I mean, it has kind of thrown a whole state of general disarray, because everyone's decided which interpretation of that ruling they want to follow.
That's right. Ironically, go ahead, Avalia.
Yes, and I want to say, as a pure listener, the ruling today, or what we read today, all of us, felt very good to the people that I am most connected to in this community. But I realized from the chats and the email and the texts that are running rampant that no one clearly understands. Attorney Schwartz attempted to make it clearer. Other people did the same. As the two people before me, two directors before me, have said, everybody's inclined to interpret the same language in different ways. So right now, today, it's a rough one. We'll see how it settles. But I don't think it's a good call today. Of course, the people on the other side are disappointed and angry, and some of us are not so angry. Thank you.
Thanks, Avalia. As luck would have it, Arthur Schwartz has just joined us. Arthur, we're at the part of the agenda where we were just hearing item 7 on the open session part of the agenda. So we were just hearing a report about the April 2nd KPFK LSB meeting, and then someone asked the question about how the judge's ruling on the temporary restraining order that was released the other day, how that affected people's disposition. But before we hear from Arthur, which is the general counsel report and Q&A, which is in 3 more items, the next item on the agenda was an update on the WPFW lease, and we have this on the agenda for a 10-minute item. We're not making any decisions this evening, because I don't think we have enough information to make any decisions. We'll simply report 2 things, and then invite my, fellow WPFW directors to chime in. Our LSB met last evening. As some of you know, we're currently leasing space on K Street. Our lease there ends in August. And, you know, so we're trying to decide what to do. And many of you have heard, because Stephanie's talked about it in her reports, that there was an option on the table to move into a different space that would be much cheaper rent. And it turns out that the much cheaper occurs not because the price per square foot is lower, though it is somewhat lower. It's not dramatically lower, but that the number of square feet is dramatically lower. So most of the savings, it would take our monthly rent expense from something like $17,000 down to $5,000. And, but there are a lot of concerns about the space on the part of the LSB. And so the LSB passed a motion last night, asking, and I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but something like, please don't do anything until May 25th so that a, relocation committee of the LSB could, find other space. That was the one thing, that I wanted to report. And of course there will be, I don't have the exact wording of the motion, or I would have shared it with people, or hope that, one of my fellow directors would have, if they have it. But then the other thing that came up is that, apparently our current landlord on K Street is, had been offering to renew our lease, and is, that option is no longer on the table. So any rate, I don't know if my, so that means we're going to have to do something. We just don't know what the something is yet, in terms of moving. And so Vanessa or Donna or Sue, if any of you want to add anything to that.
I was trying to find the vote from last night, but it is essentially, as you stated, asking the PNB not to make a decision until the 25th. Part of the information that the relocation committee needs, and this is a new relocation committee. The first committee was three people, the GM and two other people. They were completely left out, the other two people of the process, while the GM went off by himself and did whatever. Now nobody knows anything. So now there's a new relocation committee that's much more broadly based, more people, more broadly based, and we just need time to see, compare, do some comparables and see what's out there. The difference in square feet is like 60 cents. The new space is 60 cents cheaper, per square foot cheaper than the current space. So it's not what was represented to us in terms of sounding like pretty much the same space we have, but for so much less money. It's basically comparable to what's on the market. You do a Google search and you see pretty much that amount of space is what the market bears for that price in that neighborhood. So it's nothing extraordinary. It's just a whole lot less space, which then brings into question how the station would be affected by trying to operate in like 80% or whatever the percentage is, less space than we have. And again, without any consultation with or any information to the LSB, just making executive decisions. So I want to ask Stephanie, part of this is the success of the relocation committee and being able to get comparables is dependent on getting a copy of the agreement with the agent that the station is currently using. Jerry has committed to give this. The GM has committed to give this. I've not seen him follow through with giving one single thing he's ever promised to give, ever. So I'm asking Stephanie if there have been a lot of communications back and forth with him today, with other people, trying to get that information. If Stephanie would direct him to follow through with his commitment that he made to the LSB to provide this information. We simply need a copy of a contract with the current commercial real estate agent so that we can engage with another real estate agent. They need to see what the provisions are, because we don't need, it would not be fair to that person to pull a bunch of listings for us, but then the other agent would profit with the commission. So he just needs to see the terms. So Stephanie, can you do that?
Yes.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. I appreciate that. That's all I have.
Thanks. Sue? Sue Goodwin?
Yeah, I just want to echo a lot of, it was a late meeting. However, a lot of questions were raised about the process and the transparency. The actual value of the new property, though it did appear there are some, there were questions about space and also about safety. A number of people raised questions about safety of the neighborhood and how staff might deal with that. And a suggestion that we return to the process, re-examine it and re-examine the decision, which seemed to make sense. I'm not sure how the PNB is involved in forwarding that, but we should take some kind of action.
Chair, this is James with a point of order.
What rule is being broken?
It's a good question. I'm not sure what rule is being broken, but I would say we should be more careful about publicly evaluating the performance of our employees in this conversation.
My apology. I forgot we were in open session. My apology. I was not thinking.
Thank you. Good. I'm with you. I'm not sure precisely what rule it is, but it's just, thank you, Sagerton. Appreciate that. or it's not, I'm not sure what rule's being broken. I don't know where you would point to the rule, but at any rate, Donna, did you want to add anything since Donna Grimes? Okay. I see other people's hands. Beth?
We are at time, Chair.
That's a legacy hand.
Okay, gotcha. I can put your hand down. Okay, so we're at time and all the hands magically just went away. Okay. So that brings us to the ED report and Q&A. Oh. And this is a
chair point. I'm not sure. So does the PNB vote on this?
I will address that question. The answer is the PNB is the body that has the authority to to instruct Stephanie to sign a lease. It's not the LSB. So, you know, I can find the exact, references for people. And so something at some point will come before the PNB, right? Because obviously, unless in the next couple weeks, somebody donates a building to WPFW where we can live rent free, we're going to have to sign some sort of lease somewhere. And so the PNB will have to act on that. But technically speaking, the LSB's motion that they passed last night has not yet been forwarded to the PNB. And so, you know, and so there's nothing to do tonight, but there could be something to do. I don't know. Maybe next week. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. So moving on to the next item is the ED report and Q&A, and this is a 20-minute item. Stephanie.
Thank you. In the ED report that was sent to everybody today, there's a updated financials form that was listed, basically the same form that is in most of the reports. Last week, we listed the payroll expenses that were put out. That's not in this report because we don't have payroll to pay this week. But what I did add as requested, and then the chart that follows along from our most recent consolidated financials is the central services that have been paid from each division, to the national office, unpaid central services, the paid central services to the archives, and then the unpaid central services to the archives. So both of those charts are on the report that was sent out. We have the consolidated financials that were completed for period ending February of this year. Those were done just right before the National Finance Committee. So although they were sent to the Finance Committee, it's quite a few pages, and so we didn't have an opportunity to look at it very closely during the National Finance Committee, but everyone does have it there, and we will take a much closer look at the next National Finance Committee, and then those will be presented to the National Board. When we do get the consolidated financials, I pull out the page for the National, not the National Office, but the entire Foundation consolidated spreadsheet, and then also each division's consolidated spreadsheet, send those out to the general managers that they can then have a chance to take a look at that. And then we review it, Markeisha and the general manager and myself, just to see if there were any discrepancies, if things that we received to plug into the reports was actually coded where it needed to be coded. And then we review those. We also have been working quite a bit with the elections. I know that there's been some emails that have been going around of people saying, you know, oh, now all of a sudden the board, you need to start working on the elections and you have a short amount of time to get things done. But I know that it has been reported at the PNB meetings and on other committees and meetings that I've been sitting in for a while now that we have been working and speaking for quite some time now with a nationally recognized nonprofit, nonpartisan political organization. We met with them again earlier this past week to work, to talk about greater detail of, what their scope of work will be, how many hours will be required, that sort of thing, to serve as the national election supervisor. And then the organization would provide local election supervisors from their local chapters where in each of the cities where we have a station. So they will be presenting a proposal sending a proposal to myself and also to Julie next week, either next Monday or Tuesday, the week of April 17th. And we'll take a review of that proposal. And then, of course, before anything is signed or reviewed, we will let the PMB take a look at it as well. So as much as there are emails floating around of people saying that nothing is going on with the election, these are actually conversations that have been going on for quite some time. Also just about sort of comments or rumors that are spinning around. I received quite a few emails and phone calls regarding why the building in Los Angeles, why the buyer released that from escrow. So there's, you know, crazy false narratives that are passing around. So I put on the bottom of the ED report just the basic statement that I've been giving to people via email and also during phone calls that is, you know, explaining exactly why the potential buyer stepped out of escrow. And it was really just to do with the financing that they had available. So if you are, you know, hearing any, I don't know if I'm sure the PMB gets CC'd on many of these things or as many phone calls or emails or texts that I get regarding some of these things. But this is just a basic, you know, statement that I've been telling everybody, which is, you know, why that actually happened. So we do have a lot of potential buyers that are still walking through the building. We're averaging, I would say probably 1 to 3 per week of people that are looking through. No one has actually come forward yet, but it is still up and listed for sale. As Jim had said earlier, on April 10th, which was just a few days ago, the CPB announced that the due date for the CPB application was moved up to May 8th. Fortunately, we had already been started working on that. A lot of the narrative is already being written, and I'm working very closely with John Amelia, sort of going back and forth with some of the FCC regulation things that need to be filled out. He's working on that with me. And then just the basic narrative of what we, you know, that's required for that grant, I've already been writing for a while. We did meet at our monthly general manager and directors meeting that we have on the second Tuesday of every month. General manager from our affiliate station in New Mexico met with us and talked with the general managers for a good probably hour and a half or so, just going through the financial sections of the application so they can kind of get a better grasp and understanding of the information that I will be looking for. So I've had a couple of phone calls with some general managers already, but rather than just handing those application forms to them to fill out, and then I'll compile that into one generic application, Markeisha and I will be meeting with the general managers and the business managers or whomever they feel is necessary to help us fill out this information one-on-one via Zoom, and we'll fill out that part of the application together. One of the things to sort of take note, because people have been saying, for example, that we don't have the staff numbers at KPFT that is necessary, one thing to remember is that the CPB grant application is filled out on behalf of the Pacifica Foundation. We are one foundation that happens to have different divisions, and we have one 501c3 number, and the application is filled out on behalf of Pacifica. So a lot of those requirements that people are concerned about, when we put in the list of employees, we have to list every employee. We have to, you know, list our financials. Everything is based upon our most recent audited financial statements and our projected budget for this current fiscal year and our upcoming fiscal year. So again, you know, a lot of the concerns that people may have about individual stations, we are applying as one foundation. And so that will also, I think, sort of work. Some people also concerned about the listeners and putting in our ratings and the Nielsen numbers. We do have to submit that, and we have to submit our listener numbers based upon the past 2 spring quarters. And those were, you know, requirements from CPB. So we would be pulling numbers from the spring quarter of 2022. Spring of 2021, and the most recent completed quarter of this current year. So it's, again, not so much that we have to reach a certain level of numbers of our listeners, but the CPB wants to make sure that we have listeners, and we do. So they may not be as high as we want them to be. They may not be as high as they're looking for in the size of the markets that we reach, but we do have listeners. And there are some organizations and, you know, community radio stations that may submit applications to CPB, and they only have, you know, maybe it's just a couple of people that are running a station out of their garage, and they really only have 10 or 15, you know, listeners. So what those rates and what those numbers that they're trying to look for is that we actually do have strong signals. We do have the ability to reach large audiences, and these are the numbers that we have. So we may not, that may not be, it's hard to tell because you don't really get, you know, specific answers from the CPB when you talk to them. But what they are looking for is just to make sure that we have listeners. So, we're moving forward with that. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a small stack of hands here. I see Adriana, Jim Sagerton, and Jim Dingman. Go ahead, Adriana.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for the clarifications. The only thing that I will ask, if you have the P&L, like we talked before, I think that that is nothing, is automatically generated, right? I want to know Markeisha, or you have that available for us to see. That's the only thing that I'm asking for.
And that was submitted to the National Finance Committee, and I believe they have to look and review it, and then the Finance Committee submits it to the National Board.
I don't think that that's that way. I think that the PMB, the Finance Committee is a committee of the PMB. The PMB members have the right to see. And what I'm trying to say is nothing to review. You can review all that you want, but that is what happened. It's nothing. It's not a budget or something. It's any promise. It's exactly what happened. That's why I think that it's important that we see the numbers. Thank you.
Thanks, Adriana. I will note that it is the practice of the National Finance Committee to review the monthly financials before we share them with so the treasurers get to see them, but before they can be shared with local finance committee people, we want to make sure that we are, you know, that we've looked at them, that we approve them. I mean, because one of the things that happens, you know, and this happens fairly consistently, that there's some item that's been entered in the general ledger where it's coded incorrectly. And by looking at the monthly financials, oftentimes, directors or treasurers spot problems like that and then say, oh, we just need to recode that transaction so that it winds up on the correct line. It's not that it's, I mean, you're right. You know, the expenditures are the expenditures and the receipts are the receipts, but they, you know, we're human people and we sometimes make mistakes. And so that's the point. And the reason for the NFC to approve those things before we share them a little more widely is just to make sure that we don't have, you know, versions with errors that are shared a little more widely. So I appreciate your interest and, you know, think it's a good idea to share them with directors, but, you know, I still think it's worth making sure that, you know, really there are no errors in it. So,
I want to be sure, because the National Finance Committee is not only directors, you know. National Finance Committees have people that are not directors. And I believe that we can receive, even if you want, we can receive it. You know, it's like you said, it's part of the ledger. It's nothing to change. And that's why I'm asking for that. And it's tradition, since I remember, that the PMB receive it. Thank you.
Your point's taken. Thank you. Sagerton, you're up. And sorry if I answered the NFC question for you. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. You did a good job. And I would just like to say that it is not correct to say that it's just the ledger, because the ledger is oftentimes mistaken. So the reason that we share this with the general managers and the business managers for the units that have them is to make sure that the numbers are correct or at least in the ballpark before we put out something that will be made, yeah, well, more, even worse, made a big deal of when it's just an error, which has happened in the past. So we want to get it right, and then we want to distribute it more widely. So, in fact, the policy is that we provide it to the GMs, to the, of course, the chair of the board. There are five Pacifica board members on the committee, plus the treasurers, so that they can all look at it first and make sure that there are no glaring errors in the numbers. And so a couple of other questions. I want to say first that the general manager at WBAI reported to me on the meeting that you had, the working meeting that you had on the CPB applications, and he was very impressed with the working meeting. It was not a BS meeting. It was a working meeting. He was very impressed with how that was conducted and the work that got done. And so I'm very happy about that. And then I wanted to ask a specific question of the executive director, which is the buyer who withdrew was needed additional upgrades because of their finance. The financing that they got, that they had, was about what it would take, involved a limit, you know, they had a limited amount of financing. And in order to get the building into the condition that they needed it for their purposes, it would have required an additional $2 million of investment into the building. That does not mean, and this is a question, I'm sorry if I'm drawing it out here. It was not that the building is worth less than we're asking for. It's that in order for them to achieve their purposes within the financing that they have, that they needed to do an additional $2 million of work to make it suitable for their purposes. Is that the correct interpretation?
And Jim, your time is up. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather.
Yes, that is the correct interpretation. They had their designers, their architect, their building inspector, when they did their walkthrough, the amount of work that needed to be done to redesign the building to their needs was more than they had been approved for financing. The valuations that we've had done with different people from the brokers that we first looked at and worked with to give appraisals of the building, there were at least five different companies that we looked at. All of them also brought people through to give a rough inspection of the work that would need to be done. And it estimated anywhere between $44 a square foot to about $58 a square foot for the basic repairs that needed to be done. That would be air conditioning, you know, the locks on some of the doors, ceiling repairs, electrical work, plumbing work. And so the repairs that we haven't talked about the prior would be anywhere between $800,000 to $1 million to repairs to the building. The cost of the $2 to $2.5 million was for the redesign that they needed to configure the offices to what they wanted it to be. They're not in the broadcast business. They had no use for the studios. The current configuration did not work for their business. So they opted to try to go for a building that would not require as much redesign.
Great, thanks. Dingman, you're up.
Well, two questions. It sort of piggyback a little bit on what Jim said. So the fact that these folks wanted, because I just did the quick calculations, 58 per square foot works out to about $750,000. So is this going to be a situation with every possible buyer coming through, in your opinion? Number two, where are we at with the whole archive question? Because at one point we were told that the archival magnetic tapes had been essentially off-site for 30 years, and in some cases we're not sure of the quality or the condition of them. And as we all know, magnetic tape is quite sensitive. So I just was wondering what kind of measures are being taken to basically see if this stuff is still operable. Because I know that would be a hell of a lot of work, but, the question of 80% of the magnetic tapes, you know, in some place where they could, you know, basically get hit by the desert sun. I mean, I have no idea where they're stored in Los Angeles. And finally, just as a little detail, as you recall, the question of hiring a company to complete the CPB application that would basically take our contours and juxtapose them with sensitive information. I'm just wondering if that little detail is also in train now so we can not have to worry about it. Thank you.
I don't have any idea if potential buyers would have the same questions that the potential buyer that we had would have moving forward. I don't know what buyers are coming through and what their businesses are. We've had people come through that are entertainers that are looking for musical space for their own production studios. We've had people come through that are psychologists. We've had people come through that are looking for community office space to use and rent for counseling. We've had people come through that's a law office. So I really don't have any idea if that same issue would come up with anybody else. With the archive offsite, the two individuals with the archives are at that storage facility pretty much two days each week, looking through everything that's there and pulling tapes randomly and then bringing them back to the office to determine their condition. So far, things have been in great condition. There's been somebody that actually was looking for something that, you know, was an archival tape of something that aired in New York in the 60s. They were able to find it relatively quickly and were also able to make the digital copy that they needed for it. So I think it's one of those things that we're, you know, they're now just sort of randomly pulling things to see the condition, trying to better organize what's there and pulling some of the things out so we can get better monitoring or listing of everything that we have. So
Chair, we are at time.
Move to extend 5 minutes.
And then the company that does the contours and juxtaposing with the census, I haven't received the contact information yet from, well, I received the contact information and sent an email to the person, and I'm waiting to see if to have them come back with what the cost would be. Because the costs that we were given could be anywhere from, you know, they roughly said it was $1,000, but I don't know if that's $1,000 for all 5 signal areas or if that's $1,000 for each signal area. So that would be, are we looking to pay this company? Again, which the company to explain it is that the CPB requires that we do a census count, compare the coverage map that we have with the current census and then putting that together with what the listeners are, you know, how many people are in those areas and then compare that to our listeners. And the CPB requests that an outside firm do that work. To make sure that that's accurate. So the outside company that was recommended, again, as we said, was roughly $1,000, but I'm looking and asking them to see, again, as I just said, is $1,000 total or is it $1,000 per signal? So are we looking to spend $1,000 or $5,000 to get that report done as an attachment to the CPB application?
And so far, we're not seeing the temperature as an issue, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So, as Darlene noted, we're out of time, but I see a stack of two. I still see Sagerton. Is your hand up from before, or is that a new hand? And Fred Dodsworth. So
new hand, Chair.
New hand. Oh.
Move to exhaust the stack.
Yeah. So, is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Thank you. Any objections to the move to the motion to extend to exhaust the stack of two speakers? Hearing none, go ahead, Sagerton.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that we did receive the latest financial reports at the NFC meeting. They did come in very soon before the start of the meeting, so we didn't have a chance to review them. And in keeping with that policy that we have about not releasing them until we check them, I did not announce that. But yes, we were very happy that the Great Plains is up and working, and Markeisha and Stephanie are able to use it. So that we're now generating financial reports again. That's very good news. And I actually have no problem with Adriana's request that as a director, she see that information. We can adjust the policy to have all directors receive the information rather than just those on the finance committee. Although there is a representation from each station on the finance committee, I would just say that that should be strictly, that the receipt of that information should be strictly, we should strictly adhere to the non-disclosure agreements, because in the past we've had difficulties with information that was wrong going out, and that could have implications for our fundraising and for our lenders and other things. So I have no problem sending that out to directors who have signed the non-disclosure agreements. Thank you.
Thanks. Fred.
I haven't heard it said this time, but last week it was noted that the archives floor is extremely stressed, and that this was a concern last week. And so those people who were asking about the sale should recall that information.
Yeah, we're going to bring somebody else in on our side to take a look at that, rather than, because we had not heard that prior, just from the individuals that went through with their business, their building inspectors. So I want to get secondary opinions from people that we've selected to take a look at that as well, rather than focusing on, inspectors that come from a potential buyer who may want to use that to lessen the price.
All right. Thanks. So that's the end of the ED report and Q&A, and that means we're moving on to the general counsel report and Q&A. Welcome, Arthur.
So,
this is a 20-minute item, but go ahead.
So I heard what some people saying that there was some lack of clarity about the decision, but I don't actually think there's any lack of clarity. The judge ordered, basically at our invitation, us to have an election. Whatever should have happened in 2022 and whatever should happen in 2023, it should occur in such a way as there would be a conclusion to the election by December 2023. That's all he ordered. And some people were saying that somehow that the judge had ordered the unseating of delegates, but he did not say that. What he said on that issue, sorry, I thought I just had the page up.
Page 11, Arthur.
Thank you. Okay, he says,
line 21.
He says, each election cycle presents each active member of the LSB and PNB with a unique opportunity to cast their vote and shape the governance of Pacifica. However, removing defendants, which would be the six PNB members, delegates at this time, would either throw the governance of Pacifica into disarray or place the court in the position of approving and disapproving the individual actions of the board and the membership of the board on a case-by-case basis. So he's basically saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And he didn't grant that. So all he ordered was an election. And anybody that tries to read anything else into this is reading tea leaves. That's what he said. So he ordered us to have an election, and it's nothing we weren't going to do. And the only thing that the defendants, the plaintiffs can do here, if they is to try to rush to have some appellate court issue, you know, the relief that the judge didn't issue, and they'll never succeed in doing that. They have to show that the lower court acted in abuse of its discretion. Not just that they were wrong, but on a preliminary injunction, the standard for succeeding on an appeal is to show, and because he didn't make a finding one way or the other about whether people should have stayed in office or not. He just said, I'm not going to get involved in this. It's too complicated. It's involving the court too much of in approving and disapproving individual actions of the board and the membership on a case by case basis. That's a discretionary choice that he made. And they'd have to show an appellate court that that was an abuse of his discretion, that he basically was ignoring this horrible, outcome, and he should have involved himself in basically in running Pacifica, which is what they were asking the court to do. So that should be the end of the case. At some point, if there's no appeal, the judge will say we can take discovery and he'll set a trial date a year or change from now. Because I listened to the last conference and he was basically giving people trial dates in May 2024. So that should be the end of this case. Because by May 2024, we will have had elections and everything will be copacetic. To me, the only question that we have to resolve as a board, and I, you know, heard these arguments back and forth, is whether the people that the positions that should have been open to election in 2022, if they get filled in 2023, should they be 3-year terms or 2-year terms? And also, how do we tell? One of the difficulties with that is how do we tell which, if there are 2023 positions and 2022 positions, how do we tell who's running for what? And we're not going to have two separate ballots, a 2022 election ballot and a 2023 election ballot. So the board is going to have to, you don't have to grapple with it tonight. There's no answer in the bylaws because this is a unique situation and the board is going to have to give a direction to the election administrator, whether we're running, you know, if it's 16 out of 24 positions, are we running them all for 3-year terms? Or are we running some of the positions called 2-year terms and some of them called 3-year terms? And people opt to run for both? Do we have separate elections for both? But in terms of this dispute over who is currently an LSB delegate, it's over. The fight is over. I haven't seen anybody argue to the opposite. And it's time. I'm preaching to the converted here. It's time for the folks at KPFK who agreed with Ziri to join the next meeting of the LSB and KPFK, have a quorum, elect officers, and then elect board members. So that's really the only thing I have to report on. Nothing else has gone on in any of the other pieces of litigation.
Thanks, Arthur. I see a couple of hands. I will just, before I recognize others to ask questions, I will just say that I think one of the things that could have happened that led to an awful lot of the confusion is, you know, at the beginning, you know, in the abstract, if you will, of the order says that the, temporary restraining order is granted because there was some component of it that was granted, right? But, the judge didn't grant everything that, the plaintiffs were asking for. And so I think what happened was a lot of people saw that sort of abstract, saw that it was granted, didn't read the whole order, and so didn't understand all those nuanced aspects to, you know, what was actually in the order. So I suspect that's an awful lot of the conclusion is, you know, people not having carefully read the whole document and sort of, and as sometimes happens in Pacifica land, sending an email anyway. So, okay, so I will start recognizing people I see.
Which, by the way, is why when I started seeing those, I usually don't get involved in these big, big discussions. I jumped in and said, no, that's wrong.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Julie, I'm really shocked.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to start recognizing people. I see Sagerton, Fred, Teresa, Adriana, and Ali. Go ahead, Sagerton. You're muted still. All right, maybe we'll.
Sorry, I was muted.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to say, particularly with regard to Michael Novick, who came out with a quick response, who's the interim GM at KPFK. He was looking at that initial bit that came out on the court website, and I had the same confusion that he did. To me, it wasn't clear on first reading what it meant. So, you know, I understand why people were confused about that. And you did have to read the whole thing in order to understand what was happening there. And then finally, I want to say that when we debated what we were doing, it was said that the terms had of the of people who were currently serving past their 6-year normal term limit, that those terms were not extended. The terms were over. We didn't extend the terms. That would have required a bylaws amendment. We simply suspended the operation of term limits in respect of the overall democratic purposes of the Pacifica bylaws, which when directors are supposed to be replaced by an election, rather than have runners up replace people who were supposed to be replaced by an election, who were basically people who were defeated or did not win in the last election, it was more democratic to keep the people who had actually been elected by the voters in the prior election. So my analysis of how we go forward with this is that I'll just finish quickly. The way to do this going forward is understand that those of us who are on the board now are serving part of the next 3-year term, and that it's the election that will take place will be to fill the remaining 2 years of that term. And the way we've done that in the past, I think, is that the highest vote getters get the 3-year terms if there are 3-year and 2-year terms in the same election, and the people who get fewer votes get the 2-year terms. And I'm not even clear if we will need to do that, because 2023 was initially an off year. So we may just have to deal with the remaining 2-year terms that were considered to be concluded. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Sagerton. Fred, you're next.
Hello. In this litigious environment, I would like to seek the advice of our counsel in terms of how this is going to affect the 6-year limit. If we have people with 2-year terms and then 3-year terms, or 3-year terms and, you know, it's the other question I had was, what will we do if we can't get the folks who are self-appointed to actually attend the KPFK LSB?
Well, you will have meetings and they won't attend. And if they don't attend a certain number of meetings, they get kicked off, right? And then other people will succeed into those spots.
Thank you. How about
we'll have to figure out how to do that since we're, since we've eschewed the succession question and it may be they just get kicked out and there's a smaller number of people on the LSB. So if there's 10 people that don't want to come, then that LSB is going to have 14 people.
Yeah. And I will just add that, when the KPFK LSB was able to get quorum when they met on, it must have been March 26th. So it was a quorum that was, not the Ziri faction, the other faction, right? I don't understand all the factions at KPFK well enough, but you get my basic point here, right? But the folks who were there at that meeting, I thought were rather magnanimous in terms of saying, hey, look, let's excuse the absence of those who aren't present today. But that's not going to happen forever, right? And so I think, Fred, that's the answer to your question is at some point, you know, it, particularly because, you know, now we've got a decision from the judge, right? And so, you know, what's the excuse to not show up for legitimately called meetings of the KPFK LSB at this point in time? You know, I would argue after this Sunday, you know, there's really no reason. So, you know, anyway.
And then the other question was the 2-year term versus the 6-year limit.
Like I said, we're going to have to figure, we don't have to figure it out tonight.
Exactly.
And we should debate it around and.
No, that's exactly correct. We should, it's going to take us, you know, a handful of months to pull off the elections themselves. And so what we have to do is, you know, come up with, we've got a little bit of time before we need to know the answer to that question, but it's a ripe question and we'll figure it out. Teresa, you're up.
Hi. Arthur, earlier in the meeting, during the open session, we took a vote.
We're still in open session, right?
Yes, we are.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Earlier in the meeting, there was the issue of the seating of the candidates at KPFK. I had hoped to bring up so you could, in executive session, so you could answer some questions. And, an item was brought before the, chair that we were not going to discuss this in open, that we were not going to discuss. It was wrong to even discuss it. And I would like to bring this up in executive session so you can answer some questions. Will you be here in executive session so we can ask you some questions about this?
Sure. I took a nap, so I'm being okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Adriana, you're up.
Yes. Thank you, Arthur. To start with, I mean, the PNB vote to take that motion off because it was out of order and the PNB decide to take it out of order, that motion, we don't need to discuss it, that's why. But my question have to do, you know, I'm confused too, I didn't have time to read everything, but what is confusing to me, if it's the judge is saying that the resolution, they said that cancel, in a sense of suspend the election, was null and void, that means that the resolution that come after that, the PMB have a resolution to extend the terms or to keep and not replace the delegate, that the reason was this exactly motion of the PMB. If that motion of the PMB is null and void, how could that be that the next decision based on that are valid? I don't get that part.
First of all, I can't find in any minutes a vote to cancel the election. So he said any part of that resolution. I don't think I've been saying that you guys never voted to cancel the election. You just voted about what to do because there wasn't an election. If somebody could show me a motion that was passed that said the board votes to cancel elections. I wasn't here when it was passed. And I don't see it in any minutes. So that's what he said. But Adriana, it says in the judge wrote expressly that he wasn't going to remove delegates at this time or put the court in the place of approving or disapproving the individual actions of the board and the membership on a case by case basis. He didn't grant that. So he said he was voiding the resolution that Ziri said there was a resolution to cancel elections. I kept saying there wasn't a resolution. It just didn't happen. Adriana, if you can find such a resolution, please bring it to the board.
No, I wasn't in the board, Arthur. That's why I would not discuss that. But when I asked about this issue, they told me that the delegates were extended or were not replaced because the PNB suspend or delay the 2022 elections. That's what I was told, and it's in open records in the audience. That's why I'm asking.
There is a resolution about that, but that resolution doesn't say anything about suspending the election. So whatever the judge was talking about, you know, people make things up. The papers that they submitted had so many made up facts. It was like Donald Trump. I heard today that all the court employees were crying when he walked into the court last night. Right? That's what he said, on Fox last night. They were crying. They were saying, I'm so sorry, Mr. President. And yes. I know court officers, they said nobody was crying. Nobody even held the door for the guy when he walked in the courtroom. So Ziri said the board met and voted to do this and the board voted to take KPFK off the air and the board is not making they put this in, they're not making any, plans to keep KPFK on the air once they sell the building. This is really a hidden effort to take KPFK. That's what there was so much make believe stuff. So the judge bought that there must have been a resolution, but I don't think, tell me if I'm wrong. I can't find a resolution. I looked at the minutes. He said that resolution is null and void. Okay. It was null and void, but it didn't happen in 20. And then he said, so do it in 2023.
That's exactly correct, Arthur. There was no such resolution.
We are at time, Chair.
So I see Ali Lexa, James McFadden, and Jim Sagerton still on the stack. Is there a motion to extend to exhaust the stack of three?
Yeah, motion to extend.
Thank you, Jim Dingman. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Heather.
Thank you, Heather. Any objections to the motion to extend just for to hear those three? Hearing none. Go ahead, Ali.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Three quick questions. First question, are we still in open session?
Yes, we are.
Okay, Arthur, at the very end of the judgment, the thing that was issued earlier 2 days ago, at the very bottom it says that the six people mentioned are, quote, enjoined, unquote, to comply with the findings. So enjoined is kind of an unusual word.
No, he says are enjoined from violating the terms of the bylaws regarding the election process of delegates. That's what he says. And the Pacifica Foundation. He doesn't say enjoined. So since they were sued, I don't know why they were sued, but they also have to make sure that the election happens by December 2023.
Right. So just correct me if I'm wrong. What it's basically saying is those six mentioned, they need to comply or cooperate with the finding that we need to hold our elections this year.
Yeah, that's it.
And nothing. Right.
And I know so, that Sagerton is going to fight it tooth and nail, but.
Okay, so finally, can we put to rest the constant objections that the six members are illegally participating with this national board?
Yes. They're done. The judge isn't removing anybody.
Okay. Hopefully we won't be hearing that every meeting again. Thanks, Arthur.
Sagerton, you're up. I'm sorry, McFadden. I saw the letter A in James. Sorry. Go ahead, McFadden.
I just wanted to point out that I think our biggest decision about the upcoming election is whether it's for a two-year term or a three-year term. And there's no problem with a three-year term because it's still an odd year, and they won't be overlapping. And so if somebody's going to run and go through that process, we just need to make a decision. And about that, that would be the primary issue, I think, that might be contentious. I don't see anything important about being on the same schedule as we had before for those terms, or whether we should just go to anybody's going to bother to run, give them a full three-year term. It's still every other year. It's every three-year time, and it will work out fine. So I just wanted to point out kind of the obvious. Thanks.
You know, I'll tell you, if you go to all three-year terms, maybe now you only have election one out of every 3 years. I mean, I haven't done the math, but it saves a lot of money.
Yeah, no, Arthur, I think what McFadden was saying is the way our bylaws read, we have elections 2 years out of three, and we elect half of the delegates in each of those two elections.
Oh, and
right?
2023 wasn't going to be a...
Exactly. Election. 2022... It was supposed to be 21 and 22 where we had elections, and 23 was an off year. And so what McFadden's saying is what we could do is we could give the people who are running the same 3 year terms that other people who have always run have gotten, and then simply say that it's the first and the third year that we hold elections in.
Yeah, it shifts the off year. That's all.
It just shifts the year. Exactly. And you know, that the problem is, that we used our one-time mulligan, if you will, in terms of not having money to run the elections in 2022. The next time the same thing would come up, we wouldn't have that same kind of mulligan, right? So, Sagerton, you're up.
And could I just
go ahead.
Just Arthur. My take, and I, 40 years of my career is involved running elections, right? I'm an expert at doing that. I get hired by big unions to do that. Having people running for the same position, but some of them are 2 year terms, some of them are 3 year terms. That could be extremely complex. Do you have two separate, can people run for both? Can people run for, or do you just, you put the first eight people into the 3 years and the second eight people into the I'm just using a number, into the 2 year. It could get extremely complicated. And, I guess we're not running any 3 year ones. So, all right. The question, all right. I'm wrong. Sorry. Scratch.
No, it's okay.
It's a moot point.
It's okay. You had a nap, but maybe not the longest nap. Sagerton.
Please?
Sagerton?
Hello?
You're muted. Maybe.
Hi, sorry, I was muted. On the meeting board. Yeah. So I just want to make it clear that Arthur was joking when he said Sagerton was going to fight tooth and nail to have elections. Of course, I always wanted to have elections. I will point out that there was no contention about whether we were going to have elections or not until it became clear that we were not going to use the runners up to fill the vacancies created by the lack of elections, because the bylaws don't provide for that. So it's very important to me that we understand that the bylaws call for several reasons for why runners up are used. None of them include no elections. So when you have people who are supposed to be replaced by an election, and then you want to use runners up who actually were, we don't want to say defeated, they were not elected in the last election, but
it makes sense to keep the people who were elected in the last election, because again, the bylaws are silent on what we do in the case of not having an election. So I just wanted to be clear on that and make sure that Arthur understands that I have always been in favor of elections and I want elections, and felt that this was, you know, obviously a catastrophe that we were not having elections.
I was kidding. So,
I know you were kidding. Thank you. And but just noting that the hullabaloo about not having elections didn't really begin until it was clear to some that we weren't going to use runners up to fill the vacancies. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks. Somebody has an extra line open that we get feedback whenever I talk. That was the exhausting of the stack, I think, that we needed to extend this item, or that we had extended this item to cover. Okay, so that brings us to unfinished business, new business, and then a motion to move into executive session at a time certain of 11 p.m. Under unfinished business, we had that same thing that we've been carrying along that we need to not forget about and return to at some point, but we're not ready to do that this evening. And then under new business, we had Fred's motion, and we listed new business as a 5-minute item. So Fred, I don't know if we can tackle this in 5 minutes, but basically this is the only thing standing between us and closed session. So, do you want to read your motion, Fred, or do you want to postpone it to another meeting? That's also an option. You're muted.
As long as it's on the agenda for next meeting, I'm fine with that.
Okay. We can do
when
that.
When is the next meeting?
Next week.
Next week.
That's what I was afraid of.
That's what I was afraid of too, but yes.
Wait, come on, guys. Every week, 6 hours. Give me a break.
So that brings us to the motion to move into an executive session. Thank you, Fred. Is there a second?
Welcome.
Thank you, Adriana. Are there any objections to the motion to move into executive session? All right. Hearing none, we will move into executive session